With Jim Harold, our special guest, talking about his work, his latest True Ghost Stories. Let's find out where you can get the book when we come back, and also talk about Uncle Gene Sees Dead People. Okay, welcome back. Jim Harold with us. Jim, where do we get your book, True Ghost Stories?
Well, you can find it at Amazon.com in paperback or Kindle, and I should say for a limited time, it's only 99 cents on the Kindle. We're just doing that for a few days, so folks should run over there and get it. It's a full-length book, 70 stories. So Amazon, and they can find everything I do at JimHarold.com.
Before we go back to phone calls and stories, tell us about Uncle Gene Sees Dead People.
Yes, this was from Jaime in Alabama, another Alabama caller. And he said that his Uncle Gene had always been able to see ghosts. And he says that Uncle Gene would see them as clearly as a person standing in front of you or me. And he sees full-body apparitions. And one of his favorite stories was when his Uncle Gene was at work. His uncle worked at a factory. And he was kind of near one of his coworkers, and he saw his coworker, and he saw a man standing by him watching him, an unfamiliar man. So Uncle Gene walks up to the guy, and he says, "Can I help you?" And the man says, "Well, I was coming back to him," and points at the coworker. He said, "But he looks like he's busy. Can you tell him his father came by?" So he didn't think anything of it. A couple days later, he saw this coworker, and he said, "Oh, by the way, your father came by here to see you the other day." And this coworker got very pale, and he asked, "Describe him." And Uncle Gene described the man he'd seen, and the guy got even paler, and he said, "Well, I don't know how to tell you this." And he stopped speaking, and he just pulled a picture out from his wallet, and he showed it to Gene, and he said, "Is that the guy?" And Uncle Gene said, "Yeah, that's him right there." And the coworker said, "Well, I don't know how to tell you this, Gene, but my father's been dead for 2 years."
Yeah.
And he said, after that, the coworker wouldn't talk to him for about a month. And when he would see Gene at the plant, he would just go the other way. And Uncle Gene said, "I didn't do anything. I was just delivering a message." And there are other times that this has happened to him, but I thought that was a very striking story, literally to describe the guy to him. And he could just see his face turning absolutely white, just being so shocked that he was describing his late father.
I love that. That's a great story.
Good story.
All right, let's go to the phones. Mike in Ohio. Mike, go ahead. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, George.
Hey, Michael.
Good ghost story for you.
All righty.
I was younger, and my brother's friend said, "Hey, this lady just bought a house. She wants to know if we can house it. You know, she'll give us $10 to buy us breakfast in the morning." She bought a house down in the inner city, like one of the big Detroit houses with a storefront in front.
Yeah.
So he said, "There's no furniture, but just bring your sleep bag." And I was younger, so yeah, we'll go down there and do that. And when we get down there, I look in the house, and there's, like, holes in the wall. And, like, the mantle is ripped down. And I was like, "I thought she said she just bought this. She was fixing it up. What's going on?" So he tells me the story that there was a butcher shop in front, and the old couple that had the house had the store. Well, they got murdered in the house, and they used, like, the butcher knives to kill them and all that. And I was like, "Oh, my God, and you want me to sleep in this house?" So the lady that bought the house that we were house-sitting for, she slept a couple nights in there after she bought it, and she had, like, a ghost that came to her that he was telling me. And she said to him that the ghost was the woman that got killed that was pointing to the walls or something. And I was like, "So I don't understand. What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, she thinks that there's money in the walls. That's why she was tearing holes in the walls and the fireplace apart and stuff, you know?" I said, "No way." Needless to say, I did not get a wink of sleep that night. And in the morning, I got the $10. She took us out to breakfast, and I was done with that little incident. But this is the crazy part. Okay, years later, I was going to high school, and I come in, and I'm watching Eyewitness News, ABC, in Cleveland. And the headline of the news was "Money, Money Everywhere." Apparently, the hospital bought a few houses out on that side to put a parking garage up. And they had bought in a crane with a wrecking ball to tear some of the houses down. And what do you think the house that they tore down where the money was flying everywhere from?
There it was.
My jaw dropped, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, "Oh, my God." So I guess that's maybe a good ghost story.
Are there good ghost stories, Jimmy?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think that there's good ghost stories. Actually, this isn't technically a ghost story, but I love this one, and so much I made it the last story in the book because I wanted to leave things on a positive note. This one's called Aunt Anita's Last Day. This one came from us, from Sean in Maryland. And it's a great one because it was about his great Aunt Anita who lived in West Virginia. And this woman was like a Renaissance woman before anybody knew what that term meant. She was a herbalist, a linguist, a calligrapher, an artist, and a musician. She was really kind of eccentric and one of a kind. And towards the last few years of her life, she gave piano lessons to students she called her scholars. And she would wait for them to come by. So anyway, she was in her late 80s, and she was having tea with another one of Sean's aunts from the previous generation, or the next generation. And she kind of told this aunt, she said, you know, I had a dream last night that I'm going to die. I was sitting in my rocking chair, and I had my quilt over my knees to keep them warm, and I was waiting for one of my scholars to come for their music lesson. And in the dream, the ceiling and the roof over my head kind of faded away. Two angels came down from the sky, picked me up in my rocking chair, and carried me off to heaven. Now, not only, George, did she say this, she said that this was specifically going to happen the following Wednesday at 2:00 in the afternoon. Well, everybody was worried. The family was worried. They were talking to each other. They were checking on her and seeing if Anita was okay. And she said, oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. Everything's good. So anyway, sure enough, that following Wednesday, 2:00, one of her music scholars came to get their lesson. And Aunt Anita had fallen asleep in her rocking chair, and she just did not wake up. And the thing was, is that she passed away at 2:00. The angels came for Aunt Anita just when she said that they would. And Sean went on to say that Aunt Anita was kind of known in the family for having senses about things, and she was kind of what they call a fae person. And he said he's always found the story very comforting, especially since she wasn't concerned at all. She just said very matter-of-factly, and she said when they found her, she had a very contented little smile on her face with her hands folded in her lap. And Sean says, I think if you have to go, that's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it. Quick and simple.
Yeah, and at peace.
And at peace. Let's go to Hawk driving in Tennessee. Welcome to the program, Hawk East of the Rockies.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hi there.
It's been about a year or so since I've been talking to you, George, and I love these ghost stories. I will be looking for this book. My mother passed away right about 6 months before my son was born. And when he was about 3 years old, he was sitting in the living room. And I have this one section of the living room wall where it's all family portraits, and my mother's portrait is there, pictures of me as a young boy. Anyway, he turns around and looks at his mother, my wife, and points at my mother's picture and says, that's my grandma. And my wife's like, yeah, that is. That's your daddy's mama. And then he turns back around to her and says, and she comes to see me every night.
Oh.
And I say that to say this, that my house has been profiled on Paranormal Survivor. And it talks about just that same deal. And some of the, my house has at least has had up to 5 ghosts in it. And one of them was my mother. One of them was my grandmother. And the show goes on to talk about all of that. Yeah, it's pretty interesting what we've been through in the last 5 or 6 years.
What do you think of little children who communicate with their grandparents like that, Jim? Thanks for that story, by the way.
That was a great story. Georgia, you know, that rings a bell with me so much. I have so many people who call in and tell a variation of that story all the time, and I think this does happen. And talking to the experts, the idea is that children are closer to the other world when they're very, very young, and they kind of grow out of it. And they do see, you know, they see dead people, I think. I do believe that, particularly, I think, when you have a grandparent or a loved one who's passed. And, I mean, time and time and time again, we've had stories like that where people have called in and said, my child never met my grandparents, or they were close, but they were very small, and that they report seeing them and that they talk to them. And they know things that they couldn't know unless that grandparent had communicated to them. So I completely believe that. I believe there's something going on, and I believe children are more sensitive, whether it's A, because they are closer to the other side. Some people believe they're in some kind of spiritual placeholder before they come here, or if it's just that they don't understand, they're not supposed to believe. Maybe that's part of it, too.
Are you convinced that the other side, the ghostly side, is a natural, normal part of the universe, or is it different? Was it just put there by God? What do you think it is?
Well, personally, I believe in God, you know, but and sometimes it's kind of tough to reconcile yourself to this, because the thing that worries me, we talked a little bit later about maybe people who have died and don't know they're dead and they're kind of trapped. That's very sad to me, and that I have a hard time reconciling that, for example, with my personal belief in God. It's kind of like, well, why would God let that happen? But I, like so many of these things, they don't make necessarily sense to our small mortal brains. I'm guessing someday we'll understand. But the thing is that I do think it's a part of nature, and I think that some of what we see are dead people trying to come over. And I think some ghosts are other things, like, you know, residual ghosts, the stone tape theory. I've had Lloyd Auerbach, who I know you know very well, on the show multiple times, and he told me a story about a place haunted by a live person. So I don't think it's as simple as it's just dead people, but I definitely think that's part of the picture.
All right, back to the calls we go. Howard in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Howard, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. Jim.
Morning.
I had a rather creepy experience a long time ago I thought I'd tell you about. Back in the early 70s, I just hadn't been too long out of the Army, and I was having a rough time finding a job. I was doing odd things here and there, fixing cars and painting houses and things like that. And I finally answered an ad in the paper for a janitorial service. I went up to, you know, went into their office, and they hired me. And the first place they assigned me to was to this brand new shopping mall. This is in Portland, Oregon. It was on its own island, right in the middle of the Columbia River between Vancouver and Portland. It's called Hayden Island. And that mall was built right on the site of an old amusement park that had been built back in the 1920s. And it was really sad to see that one go. I, you know, loved that place, you know, all my life. You know, I've been there many times. And anyway, I got to work in this mall. And after several weeks, I got to know the old security guard that worked there. And this old guy was probably maybe 70 years old or so. He told me that he'd retired from the Los Angeles Police Department. And you know, once he got to know me, he loved to tell me stories. He told me about all the crazy stuff that happened in L.A. back in the 30s and 40s and so forth when he worked there. And he was just working, took this job to supplement his pension. And one particular night we were, I should backtrack here a little bit. The one thing that they kept when they built that mall, and just, you know, demolished the old amusement park, was the carousel. And the carousel was really, that was the crown jewel of the place. They built that place, the park, back in the 1920s, and they had purchased the carousel that had been featured at the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair. And this thing was beautiful. It was a work of art.
Oh, I remember. They had in the stuff I read.
They had completely restored it. This thing had, you know, had wooden horses that had been imported from Belgium, and they put it right inside the brand new mall. They put it right down on one end of it. And when we were working there, we had the graveyard shift. And this security guard I was telling you about, his name was Mac, and he was, I'd walk around with him when he was doing his rounds. We had some contracts with different shops inside there, maybe a dozen of them or so. And he'd go around and check the doors and so forth. And of course, it'd be dark in there. All the lights are shut off. And this particular morning, we were supposed to get off at 6. It was about 5:30 in the morning, just starting to get a little bit dawn outside. And we walked around the corner, and we stopped in our tracks. That carousel was turning. It was just turning around at full speed.
All by itself.
All by itself. It was dark in there. And the only light that there was in there was just from the few neon signs in some of those shops. And right away, he turned into the old cop again. You know, he came right out of him. He said, "Get behind me and follow me." And he got his flashlight out and had one hand on his gun. And I followed him, and we went back. We walked all the way around this thing. And you could feel the wind blowing off of it. You know, it was moving pretty fast. And we got around to, there was nobody around. We got around to this control box. It was on a pedestal, and it was a big steel box, and it had a padlock on it. And he handed me the flashlight. He said, "Hold this," and he started going through his keys. And finally, he looked at the number on the lock and found the right key and unlocked the padlock and opened it up, and there were a couple of the old-fashioned Frankenstein-type switches in there, you know. One was down and one was up. And the one that ran the drive motor was the one that was up. And he reached up and grabbed it and yanked it, you know, the wooden handle, and pulled it down. A couple blue sparks, put it down, and this thing started, the wheel started slowing down. And he closed it, locked it back up. We both just stood there, you know, looking at it. It was slowing down. And he turned around and he patted me on the shoulder and he said, "Don't worry, son. They just wanted to ride it again."
Well, they probably did. Almost out of time for the segment here, Jim, but we'll come back with some final questions for you. Do give out your Facebook and Twitter, would you?
Yes, jimherald.com. And join the virtual campfire over on Facebook for free. It's called Jim Herald's Virtual Campfire. Just look up Virtual Campfire on Facebook. And we have thousands of people on that page who tell their own ghost stories right on that page. So that's getting more and more popular.
You love doing what you're doing, don't you?
I'm extremely blessed. What I do now didn't even exist in terms of podcasting, didn't even really exist as a career path 10 years ago. So I'm really lucky. I love this stuff. I'm fascinated by it. I believe something's going on, and it's a privilege to be able to share the information and share people's stories.
All right, let's come back with a final segment to go here as we talk about ghost stories. Pre-Halloween time, we'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program for the first hour, our old colleague Ian Punnett joins me as a guest. That's right, Ian. And then followed by three special hours of Linda Moulton Howe's investigative reports. And, of course, the last hour, Conversations with Linda, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Jim Herald with us, our final segment. We'll get to your final calls as well. Are you convinced, like I am, Jim, that the Ouija board is dangerous to use?
I think it can be, because I think what happens is one of my callers, I think one of the smartest things ever said on the shows, was it's the spiritual equivalent, in my mind at least, of going to the worst neighborhood in town, dressing up in your Sunday best with your jewelry, and walking down the street at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're going to get spiritually mugged because you really don't know what you're accessing. We had a really interesting, now this one isn't sinister, but it's just weird. We had a great story from Karen in Australia about the Ouija board in this book. And when she was a teenager, 16 years old, she was at a party. They were playing with a Ouija board. It was actually homemade because at that time, Australia didn't have store-bought Ouija boards. And when it came her turn, she asked who she was going to marry. And the board spelled out the name Craig, and then something like the word riddle. She wasn't exactly sure about the spelling. It wasn't exactly how riddle would be spelled, but it was close. And she discounted the last name. Craig was a boy she had a crush on at school and figured that's him. So she said, "Is that my Craig?" And the board said no. She kind of blew it off, and she said, "Oh, by the way, how old will I be when I get married?" 22. So anyway, long story short, she did get married to a man with a name very similar to the word riddle, but it's not pronounced riddle, but it turned out that people will always call her Mrs. Riddle. And when she's in a waiting room, she'll hear Mrs. Riddle. And one particular day, she heard it three times. And she's like, "When did I first hear that name? When did I first see it written?" And she realized it wasn't when she met her husband. It was that Ouija board. And not only that, she started thinking about it. It's like, wait a minute. It predicted the name, the last name. And I got married when I was 22. And, oh, yeah, his name was Craig. My husband's name is Craig. The board called it 6 years before she was married in all three instances. And it didn't, she had forgotten about it. It didn't occur to her till that day that the Ouija board had totally mapped out her future in those three aspects: the last name, the first name of her husband, and how old she would be when she got married. So I believe it taps into something.
Ironically, Jimmy Hoffa's middle name was Riddle. Did you know that?
I did not know that, as Johnny Carson used to say.
That is very strange. So would you play with a Ouija board personally?
I have before I started doing the podcast. I played around with one a little bit. Don't remember anything sinister happening. Now, I would not. Actually, I have a confession. My wife has one from when she was a kid. It is sitting down in the basement.
No, get rid of it, Jimmy.
And I think about that. I leave it there, but I don't think I have the guts to use it, George.
All right, let's go back to the calls. Linda in Illinois now. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Thanks, George.
Sure.
This one here is cute. I told a friend of mine that I was going to do this on Ghost to Ghost, and I told him I was going to call in, and he says, "No, no, don't do that." Then he started laughing, and I said, "Why?" And he goes, "Because I don't have a radio, and I can't listen to the response that you get." But anyhow, he lived on a farm. He had bought a two-story farm, and he had horses. He was leaving to go to another state for a vacation, so he asked my ex-husband and I if we would go out and feed his horses while he was gone. And so we knew what went on with that farmhouse, but we didn't think anything of it. We were going down the road coming to the farm, and the attic light was lit. And when we pulled into the lane to go down into the back where the horses were, the light shut off. And I looked at my ex, and I says, "Uh-oh." And he goes, "What?" And I says, "Henry's back." He always called him Henry. So anyhow, he got out of the truck to go over and turn the pump on to bring the water up to feed the horses water. And just as he got near it, the pump turned on. He didn't do it, but it turned on. So he got it done and hurried up, got back in the truck, and he goes, "I'm never coming back out here again by myself." And I said, "Oh, you big coward." Every time we would go out there, that thing would turn on automatically, and the light upstairs would shut off. So when we would leave to go out, I turned around and I looked, and the light upstairs would come back on again. He had found when he moved into that house those boots that they wore that came up to the knee during the war times, guys that were in the military, and they wore those high boots. Anyway, he found those boots in the attic, so he always assumed that maybe that's who it was. Okay, so then he come back, and he's renting a farmhouse now. He come back and he says he goes to bed at night, and there's always a woman that will come in during the middle of the night, and she'll stand next to his bed and wake him up and call his name. And his girlfriend is upstairs with the kids, and she feels somebody sitting down on the bed. When she raises up to look, there's nobody there. So I don't know if these ghosts are following him, but they're there.
They may be.
I don't know if they're following him, but he'd die if they were. So I'm going to tell him I called in tomorrow.
You got it, Linda. Thanks. Do ghosts attach themselves, Jim, to things?
You know, it's really interesting just to actually talk to your friend and mine, Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
Oh, yeah. She's going to be our guest Friday night, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Fabulous stuff. And I believe that. I mean, I don't know if you've had this sensation before, George, but when you touch something that belonged to somebody that was close to you, and this is not in a sinister way, but you just sense that person. Like, I have an old pocket knife that belonged to my grandfather, and he died when I was 12 years old. But when I touch that pocket knife, I sense him, not like he's going to scare me or haunt me or anything like that, but I just, it seems to be of him, and I believe there's something to that.
Yeah, there very well could be. John in Canada, International Line. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hey.
Again.
Hello again.
Yes.
Or Bartholomew is your nickname?
Yeah, yeah. I just goofing around. Like I told you the very first time I called, I don't make any of this stuff up. I'm not lying. I don't need
it. It is what it is. Go ahead with your story.
Okay. I was sitting here, like I told you, good evening to your guests. Sorry.
That's right.
Good evening.
Good evening. And I've told George a lot of things that go on in this house, but our doorknob will start shaking like crazy, like somebody's outside trying to get in, and it's just weird things happening in the house. And so the other night I was sitting here, and I just listening to Coast Coast, and I felt this big hand on my back, definitely a hand, putting pressure on my back, but it was this time. It was the most beautiful feeling I ever felt in my life, and I don't know what it was. It was strange. Because usually when you get that, it's a creepy thing. But it was beautiful. I didn't want it to end. And I just sat still. And then I just said, Mama, you know? And then it quit just like that. Am I still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Don't want to interrupt you.
Okay. And I just wanted to say to your guest, about that guy that came to the door that time?
Uh-huh.
Did I already mention that to him and see what he thinks about it?
Go ahead.
Okay. I didn't get your guest's name.
His name is Jim.
Okay. Jim, my name's John, anyway.
Nice to meet you.
You too. And I'm not afraid of ghosts and all that kind of stuff. Or he was when I was a kid. I was scared to death of the dark. But anyway, I'm out on the side road in the country. And even just to walk down it at night when it's dark, it's spooky, I'll tell you. But anyway, 11:45, a guy comes, knocks on the door, the light's all out. The wife and I are sitting here. We were watching the program on TV. And I got security lights everywhere around here. So if somebody walks on, this place lights up like a mall. But anyway, knock, knock, knock. No lights on outside, nothing like that. Just somebody just knocked on the door, I think so, and then knock, knock, knock. So I opened the door. Here's a guy dressed up like he just came from out of the Alps or something. He's got the lederhosen, that sort of pointy little hat they wear with the big feather sticking out the side. He's got big, long, tall socks, they look like a ski boot almost, but they'd be a hiking boot. And it was cold out at that time, but he just had the lederhosen and the shirt. And he wouldn't look at me, but I just what the heck is this? And I says, who are you? What are you doing? What do you want? It's like a Halloween. This guy was fully decked out. And one thing I forgot to tell you, George, too, is he had this very old, very thick book.
A book? What kind of book?
I don't know, but you should have seen the carvings.
Probably a book of witchcraft or something.
Well, oh, my.
The whole front of the book was carved beautiful, and it was thick, and then you could tell it was old paper.
Now. Did he just disappear? What happened to him?
Well, that's the one I told you. Well, that's what I'm going to say to your fellow here, and you'll hear it, too. And so anyway, I said to him, what do you want? What are you doing here?
Probably want your soul.
And, No, he's the one who wanted to read bedtime stories.
He wanted to read them or have them read to you?
He wanted to come in the house and read them to the kids.
No, no way. That's not going to happen. Don't let that happen at all. Creepy people sometimes, Jim, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because these people who seem like they're out of time and place and they just appear actually in the book, I won't do the full story because I know we want to talk to more people, but there's a story from England where a gentleman was riding horses with some friends, and they actually happened upon a man who looked like he was from the 1600s. He would come in the middle of the road, appear, he would disappear. Then they go down the road a little bit. This guy that had this big hat with a buckle on it from the 1600s would appear, and he'd disappear again. Turns out his friend told him one time he was riding through the same forest and saw what looked to be a ghost legion of Roman soldiers from ancient times. So I do wonder, we were talking way back at the beginning of the show about the Mandela effect and parallel universes. Sometimes do we overlap with time and space? And do we see replays of things, or do people end up in places where they're not supposed to be? Maybe that's what happened to the caller here, and that's a fantastic story.
What's your take of all these clown stories we're hearing all around the country?
Clowns. If somebody's dressing up trying to scare people, I mean, if it were all in good fun, like Halloween or something, but if you're trying to victimize or hurt anyone, I think it's a very sad thing. We actually have over at the site, Marie D. Jones, who you know has been on Coast many times, she writes for us occasionally on the site, or monthly actually, and she wrote before all this started, she wrote a whole article at jimherald.com about creepy ghosts. So if it's in good fun, that's fine, but I mean, it's getting a little sinister now and a little scary, and I know there's law enforcement that's even involved in those kind of things. You never want to see anybody get victimized or hurt in any way. So hopefully people won't do that, and if they dress up like a clown, it'll all be in good fun. But like you were saying at the beginning, the very beginning of the show today, I don't think I'd dress up as a clown this Halloween.
No, I would think clown sales of costumes will plummet this year.
I would think so.
Keith in Arnold, Missouri. Hi, Keith. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, excuse me.
Sure.
Sorry about that. Little cough there. I was thinking about his doppelgangers. I think they're people that are slipping through from other dimensions. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're evil per se, but I think that every decision we make, we create a new dimension.
Mm-hmm.
We made the opposite decision. Some of these people would probably be so much like us that most people couldn't tell the difference except for maybe past experiences, or say. Well, take you, for example. I don't know if you're married or not, but let's say your wife is a blonde, mm-hmm. and you were talking about somebody seeing your doppelganger in another state. Maybe his wife is a redhead.
Yeah.
But he slipped through over into this dimension, and maybe he slips back over to his own dimension. I mean, I can see where the vibrations between the dimensions will get worn. In fact, I read a story when I was younger about a guy who stopped at a way station back in the 1870s, mm-hmm. and got out of the stagecoach and walked around the stagecoach, says, I'll just walk out here for a little bit. Changed horses that came to get him, and his footprints went out 30 feet and disappeared.
I love that. Well, listen to this story, too. Jim, you've heard of this story where right in a busy section of New York, and the guy got hit by a cab. He was dressed in 1800 garb. He just the cabbie said he just popped up.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's another story, and I don't know if it was in Japan or where it was that you hear about, where somebody showed up at an airport. He had a passport for a country that didn't exist, and seemed very confused, and it was just a very strange story. And I wish I could remember more of the details. But like the caller said, I wonder, you know, if there are parallel universes. I mean, the thing is, here's the analogy I always use, George. DNA. We didn't know about DNA in 1900. Does that mean that it didn't exist? Of course not. It exists. We just didn't know about it. Maybe it's the same way with these parallel dimensions.
Well, maybe so. We've only got about a minute left, Jim. I want you to take some time to tell us about where we get all your books, your websites, and how we listen to the Paranormal Podcast.
Thank you very much for that. First of all, the books are at Amazon.com. You can listen and read in any order. So I'd start with Campfire 5 because it's only 99 cents on the Kindle, and you don't need a Kindle to read it. You can get apps, free Kindle apps for your phone and so forth. You can tune into the Paranormal Podcast and the Campfire at JimHerald.com, iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, wherever podcasts are heard. And then finally, I would encourage, and we've seen a lot of people in the last hour do this, go over to the Virtual Campfire over at Facebook, Jim Herald's Virtual Campfire. Just search for Virtual Campfire. Join up, and we have thousands of people sharing their stories over there, and you'll also get updates on the podcasts and the book there as well. So, George, thank you so much as always. It's always a pleasure.
Jim, thank you so much, too. On our next program, as I mentioned, Ian Punnett will be my guest for the first hour, followed, of course, by Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter, with some incredible stories of high strangeness, followed, of course, by your calls with her, conversations with Linda, right here on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.